Today, we are going to talk with three people who have gone from passion for sustainability to action for sustainability. I'm Hope Whitmer, Associate Professor in Leadership and Organization at Malmo University. And today we're connecting three continents, Asia, North America, and Europe. I'd like to welcome Kavalin, Paolo, and Shimo, who are all alumni of the Leadership for Sustainability Master Program at Malmo University. Welcome to Medea Vox.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Being here. It's very nice to be here.
Paolo, what is sustainability to you?
Oh, it's a big question. The way that I describe sustainability is that for me, it's a life philosophy. It is a way in which I try to relate with the world in a harmonious and balanced way. For me, sustainability is about understanding what is the relationship that I have with others, with the environment, with myself. So it's very much something that I try to live by, you could say. And that's the question that I ask myself is, how can I live a sustainable life? How can I not get burned out when I'm working, for example? How can I maintain my relationships in a healthy and harmonious way? I don't know if anyone wants to add something. Chinomina, Keva?
Well, for me, sustainability, it's about balance. Whatever I do in life, I try to find the balance between what is and what isn't. And by that, I mean, you know, there's like all these different aspects about sustainability. But for me, it's been something that I've come into my own over time. How can I live in such a way that whatever I do, you know, I can live a balanced life? Because I also think it's very contextual. I come from the African continent, which is the fourth continent missing. and in that sense, like, I've seen different ways in which people's socioeconomic backgrounds affect the way they live. And I try to see how can we create enough balance between that and how we take care of the environment in such a setting. I'll say balance and contextual for me. That's what sustainability kind of means to me. Let's hear it, Kivalin.
Yeah, I guess it's my turn now. So for me personally, sustainability is, I would say, is the only reason I'm still alive. Is okay, I don't want to be dramatic, but it's true. Because before coming to working in with the field of sustainability, I was lost, essentially. I don't know what to do with my life. I don't know what I'm here for. What is it about this world and why are we here in general? But then I realized, okay, there is this field that we can actually find a meaning together and kind of work towards it together, even though it's not going to become real anytime soon, or even though, like, you know, 2030 agenda, anything is not going to become like real that fast. But yeah, essentially is the reason I'm getting off of my bed in the morning and push myself to work.
For me as well, it's also this deep understanding of the inner mechanisms of nature. So really to look at life and how the earth already has a way, like a sustainable system. When we take the human out of the equation, nothing goes unwasted. There is no such thing as waste in nature. Everything is already living in balance and trying to understand where we fit in that whole equation. I think that is a very interesting question and a very interesting thing to explore. I don't think we've been doing a good job at it because we've been quite, I would say, logic-driven in our society, where we put ourselves on top of the food chain. We have great intellectual capacities and we have hands and all these things that we can create good things with, but we've kind of missed that deep connection. You would call like deep ecology philosophy, as you might mention it. Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, talked about the beginning, you went from passion to action. If you can look back and see kind of this turning point where it kind of went from this interest to this personal commitment to this point of movement. So I don't know if you can reflect a little bit.
I personally have experienced the change, the paradigm shift with quite a small event, I would say. it happens when I assist a class in sustainable design for my ex-supervisor in my bachelor. The class was essentially about talking to the plant. So we were like having 5 to 6 students sitting in groups, and we all have one plant in front of us. Essentially, we just try to figure out what the plants try to communicate with us. And obviously, plants cannot say words. So we just look, we just observe, and we, you know, make sense of all the visuals and all the sense and all the movement that the plant makes. And at that time, I realized, okay, even though they cannot speak, or they don't know English or Thai, but they are communicating with us in a way. And since that time that I realized that, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do any harm to other creature anymore. And that's just my turning point, trying to talk to a plant.
Yeah. For me, it's been something that has been brewing for a while, but I would say that the turning point for me really came because I have an engineering background. So I studied electrical engineering in South Africa. So I lived in Nigeria. And already in the Nigerian context, there's a lot of, when I grew up, there was issues with like governance and the socioeconomic situation. When moving on to South Africa, I realized that sort of the same problems or challenges that faced society, the context that I came from in Nigeria, was also prevalent in South Africa. And I thought, you know, something, you know, how one way I could contribute to society is like, you know, going through engineering and studying engineering and building infrastructure to help people. But when I was doing that, I realized that there's still a lot of neglect for things that need to be attended to. Once again, the socioeconomic situation and also the amount of waste. There was not really a consideration for how much wastage was being done. And I started thinking, I need to do more. But right now, this is how I can contribute to society. And that kind of led me to, you know, obviously ended up studying the master's program and getting more insights about it. And that's, for me, that was a switch that happened. And I couldn't be happier, really.
Yeah, I think we all have like our own different stories. And for me personally, what it was very much, it came from this feeling of being isolated from the world and seeing the way that the current way we are organized and the systems that we have created are not really inclusive. And I never understood the division of why we divide one another. Why is it that we try to reduce things and separate from one another? And I had an experience where suddenly, you would call it maybe a spiritual awakening. That's the best way I can describe it. Where I felt myself being bigger than myself. Where I really felt that my life, who I am as a person, is an extension of everyone that I have met. So it is of crucial importance that whatever work I do, it is for the contribution of the world. And if I have experienced things which have created suffering within myself, then I must be able to work towards the elimination of that suffering. That was for me kind of the turning point when I realized, oh, wow, I'm actually not disconnected. I'm very connected. I just don't know how to navigate through this complex, beautiful world and life. So yeah.
You've all kind of touched on this a little bit, but how do you think that your background and different experiences have kind of influenced your perspective?
As Chimo said a little bit earlier, that the perspective regarding sustainability come from our experience in life. Everyone we met along the way, the work that we have done, good and bad things that happened to us. For me, being a girl, raising in Thailand, in Asia in general, we kind of already facing all this pressure, all this, like, you know, power structure that just suppress us and not really let us express how we feel. You know, for my entire life, I never realized that I haven't done so much about my passion. I didn't really pursue my passion. When I look at sustainability right now, here at this part of my life, I feel like, okay, I don't want to be that person anymore, the person that I was raised to be, the one that was always being suppressed. So when it comes to sustainability, I will give my all Yeah, that's essentially how cultural aspect affects me and then how I act towards sustainability. But beyond that, the professional, the career side of life also affects how I act as well, because obviously I was trained as a designer, as an industrial designer actually. So at first I was taught in school to be a very mechanistic person. So I look at things from the materials, energy, process kind of point of view. But then I have to, you know, shift my way around it and try to figure out what are the new roles of designers and how we can contribute to create a more sustainable world. And then I still have that, you know, mechanistic kind of sense. And now that I realize that the world is not mechanistic, it's dynamic, it's holistic. So every time that I've heard this from Paolo Nanchimo a lot, that you are such a pragmatic person. You are such a practical person, so very purpose-driven, very I stick to methodology and I stick to the way that I know that this would work. So I guess I can turn my strength, at least how I view it, is turning vision into a real actionable solutions.
Thanks for sharing. Others want to chime in?
Yeah, I think it's also very similar story to Kevalin. I lived illegally for 10 years or without a social security number for 10 years. And those experiences really showed me what it means to not have a voice, what it means to hide yourself, like Kiva would say, to suppress yourself. At that moment, I didn't know what those experiences would teach me about life. But those experiences have given me so much compassion because they've allowed me to live a life where I didn't have much in the sense of just being able to be in the baseline. So for me, sustainability has always been very passion driven in the social aspect. But then professionally, I also then studied engineering and computer science. So for me, I've never really understood how now that we have such amazing technology, so many ways of connecting with one another, we're still so deeply disconnected from one another. So using those experiences combined with this kind of mechanistic mindset to make things pragmatic and explainable has definitely influenced how I approach sustainability. But now I'm in a point where I'm moving more towards a place where I'm trying to explore the emotional aspects, the capacity needed, because while the pragmatic is very important, like the practical solutions, we are living in the complexity of the world is just exponentially growing. So we also need to develop the inner capacity to manage that complexity. So for me, it's just been a very, I think all of these life experiences just created this mesh of like, oh my God, what to do with all of this? How do I put it together? How do I put my life experiences, the things that I'm good at, my degrees into something that can actually be purposeful? That's what I wake up trying to figure out every single day.
Shimo, did you want to add anything or?
Yeah, I just, we cannot separate our experiences from what it is, who we are today. Absolutely not. And for me, as I said before, I grew up in Nigeria, a country that happens to be, you know, rich with natural resources, but the distribution of those resources hasn't always been fair. Going to South Africa and experiencing the same thing, my experiences as an engineer, that was a way for me to try to contribute. But it's also very like pragmatic. You do the numbers and it works. But I've always been interested in people. How do we make impact in people's lives? Because sometimes we feel like we create things, but it's not really, the target audience is not really taken into consideration. So I thought, okay, how do we step beyond that? How do we involve stakeholders? Or for me, that's what I've always thought. Like, how do we make sure that the people that we're building stuff for are a part of it, they have a stake in it? And this is what drove me towards this area, because I mean, it would have been easy to just keep building things and just being an engineer, but what impact can we make? I wanted to make more of an impact in society.
I know that you guys have, you've been working on it for a while, but it's officially a business, Futurely AB. It's a consultancy that works with organizations to assess and co-envision how businesses can be sustainability pioneers. So tell us more. Tell us what that means. Tima, you want to continue?
Thanks, Hope. I think you put it best. We are here to help organizations transition to be sustainability pioneers. That's what we do and how we do that. A bit of background, we three of us met during our master's program, and this is now passion turned to action, as you said in the beginning of the podcast. And basically, Futurely, we are a sustainability transition consultancy. We are looking to take this approach, transition design, and implement it practically within organizations. So transition design is an approach that helps think about systems and think about challenges that plague systems and how we can co-envision futures when those challenges are solved. And essentially, how do we get there? What interventions can we put in place to, you know, transition to that future that we all desire? That's just the crux of transition design. But I'm sure my colleagues are, there's so much to say about Futurely because it's something we've been working on for so long. But I'm sure my colleagues also want to add to the conversation. So I'll let them go ahead.
Yeah, Shimo, since you tapped a little bit on transition design, maybe I can elaborate on that. So basically, the framework, transition design, is a design futuring approach in which you kind of look into the possibilities that could come in the future. But in this case of transition design in specific, the future is not just 5 years or 10 years. It's about 30 years, 50 years, or 100 years. So we really take the view of the nature. It's not about, you know, creating something for the next season, creating something for the next fiscal year or something like that. It's about creating something that could potentially last sustainably until the next few generations, actually. This is how we should approach sustainability in the long term, from the long-term perspective. So Paolo and I got a little bit of the glimpse of transition design during our thesis. And we kind of fell in love with this. And originally, transition design is created or is designed to solve the systemic problem. So most of the time, it's about like urban development issues, political issues, like, you know, all those like big scale. But we also think, why can't we just try to help business transition themselves into a more sustainable version? So we're figuring out and, yeah, we are testing it out, actually. Paolo, you want to add something?
Yeah, I think the way that I view Futurely is really this consultancy where we're really trying to understand the present in a holistic manner as well and push towards the aspects of collaboration. When we talk about sustainability and we talk about futures, it is important that the futures that we design are collaborative, that they are inclusive, that they are diverse, that they are also contextual, but they're also in a way global, that they take into consideration the needs of the local context, but also the global context. And trying to figure out how to make this pragmatic in this business world is something that has been definitely difficult. Because usually the way that we've been approaching business right now is very much, you know, number-based. What is the return of investment? What am I going to get out of it? And what we're saying here is, hey, look, the world is changing. Technology is coming. Automation is coming. Jobs are going to change. We are now in a place in our world where we literally have the technology to create things completely differently. We have so much information about the way the world works. We have so much data. How can we use that data and information to create something consciously instead of doing it in this very much dynamic way? This is really where we're really trying to figure it out, is how do you get businesses to understand the impact that they have, to understand how they are relating into the world, and make it also pragmatic, actionable plans, shift the paradigms, build the capacity to work in this new way as well.
think it would be really interesting to maybe share a little bit with people how you use these designerly approaches to co-envision.
So actually, transition design is complex. You know, it's an emerging field. So we kind of have to catch up with the movement every single day. But essentially, how we view it and how we simplify the design approach to be able to implement it in business field, we kind of break it down into three phases, which we have the nickname for it. It's called WWH. So the first W is where you are now. So essentially, it's the process in which we invite stakeholders, essentially everyone that engaged with the organization, internal, external, societal, political, environmental, we invite them and try to get them talking. So the process is really empowering process that, okay, you guys have been working together, but you have never really listened to each other and what everyone got to say. So here you are. Here's your time, talk everyone, and we'll listen to you. And then we try to make sense of all the conversations. We map it out in a very visual way, we could say, to make everyone get the common understanding of where they stand, what are the problems that they are facing, what leads us to the point where everything is so conflicting. So once you get the picture, like, you know, when everyone is talking, you don't really understand. But when you map it out and you kind of say, oh, this connect to this and that really leads to this, you kind of get the idea, okay, you are, that everyone is not like working independently, but everyone is codependent. And all the issues are also interconnected. If you solve this, that would get an impact too. If you do this, another person would get an impact too. So this is how we make sense of the complexity, we could say. Try to visualize it in the first workshop where you are now.
So let me just ask a question there. So my understanding too is you actually engage people in the process where they are working together as a group. Now you had to do it Zoom where they're using an online platform to do that. But you're providing a framework for people to work with this challenge. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, we ask them critical questions, actually. So what are the problems that they are facing? And then we try to get them, like, I don't want to say bullet point, but just write down the issues that they are facing on Post-it. And then we find the themes, and we find that everyone has something in common. Everyone feels something in common. And that really connects people because they feel like they are not alone and we are in this together.
Just to add to that, I think in this process, it's very important to listen because everyone can talk, but people find it difficult sometimes to listen. And we just there to listen to the situation, listen to the challenges that they've presented. And, you know, just, and that's one of the things that has been a very empowering thing for a lot of people. It's like, oh, they've at the end, they come and say, we felt listened to. Because to really understand the problem, you have to listen to what people are saying about the problem. And that's something I'll just add to that. Yes.
Yes. And if I may add, the reason why this is so collaboratively that we really try to get people to understand one another is because complex issues cannot be solved by one person. There are issues that evolve within the network. So it is important that we understand where everyone stands. And once we build that sense of, okay, this is the problem, these are from the different perspective, the different themes, and we have a common understanding, then we can go into the second phase, which is the where do you want to go? So, okay, this is how life is at the moment. These are the issues that you're dealing with, but can we do something about it? And if these issues are removed, then can we envision a future where these issues are no longer there? And really try to map those futures, visualize them. So it's very much a possibility exercise, you would say, where you move away and you really, instead of being in the landscape and being in the problem, you move away to a point where it says, okay, this is no longer an issue. How would I be living? How would my colleagues be living? How would my organization be operating? How about society? So you're really trying to, through that process, also break down the assumptions that you have about the problem itself, break down your own beliefs, and see the possibility, see that, hey, you know what? Okay, this is how things are now, but we can do something differently. And what's beautiful from our workshop with Census, at least, was that a lot of the futures is kind of like there's so many different visions, but they can still merge. There's still these like interlock points, and being able to then navigate through that and being like, hey, look, so you have all actually these commonalities. These are the things that you want to see in the world, that you want to see within yourself. And I think that really brings people together as well, because it's like, yeah, we kind of want the same thing. We just don't necessarily talk about it so much, and we don't know how to visualize it. So now we actually have a common goal to work towards. And I think that just opens the door for immense creativity and possibilities, which we explore in our last stage. Perhaps Chima wants to tell us about it.
So to complete the WWH, the last phase is how do you get there? And this is the important part where we've mapped the challenges and we've co-envisioned like where we want to go, with the futures we want to see, our desired futures. But how do we actually transition towards that future? And with organizations, for example, we believe at Futurely that they have the ability to solve the problems. We are just there to serve as a catalyst. We come in and we, you know, after listening to everything, using our expertise, we try to prompt like the organization or the whatever, whoever we, the stakeholders that we're working with, to try to come up with pragmatic solutions. Also realizing that problems and challenges are dynamic. So you always have to be changing. It's not something that is fixed. And this is essentially what we do. And this is where we bring our knowledge and expertise into play, if you may. So yeah, that's the last stage of it. How do you get there? And at the end, we believe that organizations will be in a better place once they've gone through this process.
Thank you for joining me to discuss sustainability. For this podcast and for more information, Google Collaborative Future Making at Malmo University. To find out more about Futurely, go to www.futurely.se. And Futurely is future with an L-Y at the end. So it's futurely.se. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.